Welcome, it's The Needle and the Mouse, episode 7. We are recording live on Sunday, December 8th?
I think 9th.
I guess we could look on our phone again.
December 9th.
2012. This is our holiday show. Not really, probably not. We'll probably do one
like
more
third
before the
holiday show.
Third holiday show, yeah. So let's start. Today we're going to talk about a few things. The first one that I guess we should talk about that's a little, appropriate for the season is the future of the catalog.
Yeah.
We've recently gotten in the mail this J. Crew catalog that is quite thick, much thicker than almost any mainstream commercial magazine I've seen in a long time, besides maybe like Vogue
or
Monocle, I guess, but like much thicker than any sort of Newsweek or...
It's much thicker than any weekly,
yeah.
That's for sure.
Forbes or any of those types of things. How many pages? 100 and...
And there's no...
144
and,
pages.
Know, and there's no ads. I mean, the entire thing is an ad, but
it's
there
called
are
101
no,
Gift Ideas, Holiday 2012. So it's interesting. Sometimes they send us two of these. One is like half the thickness of the other one, and that's like...
For men.
I guess the men's version with none of the women's stuff.
Or a very small amount.
But anyway, so we have this thing, and I was, I was thinking about kind of the demise of the daily, the iPad newspaper, and, I was talking with a friend of mine this week about how he can build out his iPad magazine better and that sort of stuff. And I was just wondering, like, what is the future of this catalog? I assume there will still be a printed version for several years to come, but... Is there an iPad version of this? Like, does J. Crew even have one?
And no, I'm
would
not
that,
sure.
Would you want that? I'm going to look while you're talking.
I'm not sure. I feel like if there was, they would tout that in here. Like, see the catalog on the iPad. Because they'd have some, like, nifty graphics or GIFs or, you know, cinemagraphs or something.
Even just a button that says, buy this thing that you're looking
at. I think it's... Interesting, because last week Net-a-Porter announced that they were going to do a print magazine. Now, they have a catalog that they send out once a quarter.
What is Net-a-Porter?
Net-a-Porter is essentially like Saks online. They launched
in... So it's like a department store online?
Yeah, but it's really high-end goods. They launched in like 2000, and you know they're the most powerful online luxury retailer. And they have... They have something they call the magazine already that comes out quarterly and is essentially a catalog, but they are launching a legit print magazine. The woman who used to run Harper's Bazaar in the UK is running it. She moved to New York to do it. So they are kind of going, I believe, and you know, I haven't confirmed this with Net-a-Porter, but I believe it will live on newsstands and you will be able to buy it. So they're kind of taking it in the opposite direction. They were born online. They've benefited from the rush of online retail, and they were kind of the first people to make shopping for luxury goods online okay, and yet they are launching a print magazine. So I think with catalogs and with print magazines, it's a similar thing, that the ones that will survive and that will do really well are maybe a little less frequent, but more focused, so it's more like a treat and less in, just about disseminating information, because news, you don't need any print for at all, even dailies, which we know. But to get a beautiful big book twice a year displaying, you know, content in a really attractive way is something that, and then you save those books. I think that's where it all move. J. Crew might not end up sending, right now I think they send a catalog every month or every 2 weeks. I'd say, you know, 6 years from now, maybe they'll only be sending one twice a year, but it will be big and beautiful and lush and something that you kind of keep around for a while.
So there's no J. Crew iPad app at all. Like, if you search great J. Crew on the App Store, you find literally nothing. So there's no catalog app, which is, this is year three of the iPad. So it's not like they're just kind of too slow.
No,
like
I think
it's a conscious decision. Which is funny, because this is a nice catalog. We'll probably throw it out in a couple days. But it would look good on an iPad screen.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, I mean, You'd have to do some production to it. You couldn't just make it a copy of the catalog.
No, like, and that's what I work at a magazine right now, and it's the production and art department. It's essentially tripled their work.
Yeah.
Because now you have to create it for the magazine, but then you have to create it for a 7-inch device and a 4-inch device.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're agnostic, so you have to create it for every single device. So every page has to be made 3 times because 4 inches,
yeah,
you know, and 8 inches is a huge difference.
So do you think that J. Crew just doesn't want to be on an iPad, or do you think that it's just not a good investment for them to do that at this point?
I think that from what I know about their approach to social media and their approach to all this type of thing, you know, they're obviously really into the internet, and they have a lot of really cool tools on the internet. Their gift guide on the internet looks amazing. It's kind of like a live gift guide. It's a graph, but then squares in the graph are moving, like a pair of shoes walking across the square, yeah, that type of thing. So they care deeply about the internet, but I think that they have yet to see the return on investment on things like iPad. They're not hugely into social media. Obviously, they have a Twitter and all that stuff, but it's not something they've put a ton of investment into.
Twitter has been updated in like a year.
No, no. So it's not something they've put a ton of investment into. I don't know if that will.
Like, so I guess the answer is like that their website is their kind of web, is
exactly
their tablet catalog.
Because until they see evidence that people are buying via these things, like real evidence, not just.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that their website sells a lot of stuff via mobile. But yeah. I guess the advantage of an iPad magazine is that it would work when you're not online. But if you can only buy clothes when you're online anyway, yeah, then who cares?
Yeah, I'm sure that all of their we should look on their,
yeah,
site right now, but I'm sure that their site is mobile optimized.
There's some stuff that I think doesn't work so well, like the zooming, because some of that requires a mouse over, and that's like, you know, that's where a tablet and a computer are just different, but.
Well, I also just think, I don't know, I think our generation is kind of the last generation that will, I still like to get the catalog. Obviously, I don't call them anymore and say, I want to order a bathing suit or whatever, but I still enjoy reading the catalog and flipping through it. I don't know if people who are like 16 right now are going to feel that way. And I don't think, the thing with all that tablet stuff is, with desktops and, you know, the web brought web browsers. It's about browsing. It's about going from place to place and just kind of searching around. With tablet apps, you have to make like a concerted effort to download it. You have to think about it. You have to remember to download it. You know, I love the New Yorker app, the iPhone app. I have a tablet, but I don't really use it to read. See how cool that is?
Yeah, and they've actually sorted their gift guide by color,
yeah,
so it looks like
their
a
gift
color
guide's
spectrum.
Incredible.
Sorry, I'm just looking at the iPad.
But
website. So it works fine on the iPad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I think is that, you know, even though I love that New Yorker iPhone app and I use it every single week because it makes it easy for me to read, the issue online, and now I barely use my print issue, but for, say, New York Magazine, I never want to read that on an app because I want to read it in print, and it's much more visual. The New Yorker's perfect for that because it's all words, so it's, like,
yeah,
very simple to read on the iPhone. I just don't know if people are ever going to be like, oh, because sometimes I still forget on Monday morning to download that, and I'll be on the train and be like, I can read the New Yorker now and I'll have forgotten. So to like, especially on tablet, which is something, I just don't know if there is ever going to be a massive group of people who is like, I am going to go to my tablet at the beginning of each month and download 7 magazines and flip through them. There may be. And we just
well,
may
and
be
Apple's
the last
trying to
not
make
to that,
do that easier, like by offering automatic downloads and so it, you know, works in the background. A lot of it is just that the magazine companies have been lazy or bad at implementing that sort
of
stuff.
No, that's definitely true. But I think that it's about consumer behavior as well. Obviously, someone's calling my husband. I think it's just changing consumer behavior. And it may change, But I just, you know, who knows? Right now, like, there's all this evidence that people are spending a lot of money on iOS and using magazines and things like that on iOS, but on Android, no one's doing that stuff. So if the majority of people have Android, then what is even the point?
Do you think we'll get a J.Crew catalog next Christmas?
Yes, definitely.
And will it be 144 pages or will it be like 15 pages?
I think it might be thicker. I think it might, like I said, I think things will start to come less frequently.
Yeah, but be more substantial.
But be more substantial. You know,
yeah, that makes sense.
All these books, these magazines I buy every 6 months, they're $20 a pop. Yeah, you know, Lucky Peach comes quarterly, but we're saving them all like they're books.
Yeah, totally. Cool. All right. Well, something else I wanted to talk about, which has nothing to do with catalogs, is the idea of authenticity versus growth and mass. Like, I was, we were at a bar the other day, and I was looking at the whiskeys, and I saw, you know, oh, there's the Jack Daniels, and the brand of Jack Daniels is still like the labeling and all the brand messaging is like, oh, this is like an authentic
old-timey
thing. Like, this is your granddad's whiskey and that sort of stuff. Yet, if you go to any bar in the world almost, they're going to have the exact same bottle of Jack Daniels there. Like, it's completely consistent and homogenous around the world. Like, not even just like around New York City or around America. Like, everywhere. Like, I was in Korea and they have Jack Daniels. You go to the middle of nowhere in probably like South Africa and or wherever, and there's Jack Daniels, or Australia or Europe or anywhere. So I don't know, it's interesting. Like, if you are a publisher or a designer, like a fashion designer, how do you think about that sort of thing? Like, where do you, like, are there some, I guess it makes sense, like, some of them maybe say no to opportunities to sell their stuff in certain stores just to maintain some sort
of course,
exclusivity?
Definitely. I mean, Celine is a perfect example. You can't get that a lot of places. You still can't get it on the internet. Same thing with Chanel. Chanel pretty much only sells in their own stores, and then they have shop-in-shops in some department stores, but they own that. Essentially, shop-in-shops and department stores, when you go and there's like a little Louis Vuitton boutique at the Macy's in Herald Square, Louis Vuitton is most likely, and every deal is different, but most likely renting that space from Macy's. So it's still their employees, their, you know, their vision, that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, that's the easiest way is to decide who gets to sell your stuff and who doesn't. You know, most designers are on the opposite end. They really need buyers, so they, you know, we'll let pretty much anyone who wants to sell their stuff. But price point's a huge deal. Like, different boutiques, maybe they don't really sell things over $400, so they can't sell a lot of designers that might work with their aesthetic. Or some boutiques are the opposite. They only sell really expensive stuff. So if you're a lower-end brand that, you know, has the same aesthetic, maybe they're only going to take T-shirts from you or nothing at all because it doesn't work with their...
Yeah.
With their...
One of the examples that came to mind was Starbucks, how...
Yeah.
You know, as they grew and needed to have a kind of lower, not as high-end of a workforce, just to have be able to hire more people at a lower cost, they made those automated coffee machines.
Yes.
And there are a lot of, like, reasons given for that. Obviously, one is, like, consistency, so that... you know, two cappuccinos made after another will be exactly the same, as opposed to, you know, if a human had to grind the beans and time everything differently, they might be slightly different. Another is obviously the lower cost of employees. Like, anyone can be pretty much trained to push a button that says two shots, whereas to make a really great pull of espresso, you have to have some skill to it. So, but for me, it was interesting. Like, there was a noticeable, like, decline in quality for the Starbucks experience for me when that started happening. And, well, I wonder, like, how do you...
Well, that's what
you
have to...
First of all, is that true or is that just in my head?
No, it's true. I mean, that's what you have to decide as a business. Starbucks is a publicly traded company. Were they at that point, do you know?
I think so, yeah. They've been public for a long time.
So that's kind of... And that's not talking about J. Crew yet again, but J. Crew privatized, I think, 2 years ago because they were kind of having a bit of growing pains. And instead of, you know, letting the shareholders decide what their next move was, they decided to pull back and reorganize a little bit to be able to keep the quote-unquote authenticity. And, you know, it depends on what kind of business you want to run. If the most important thing to you is to be the most dominant brand in your category, then eventually quality does go down a little bit. It's inevitable because the more mass you are, the cheaper things, you need to make things cheaper, you need to produce more, and once you have shareholders...
And like the lower end people who will be using your stuff, just by the definition that there are more people using it, like it'll be a different...
Yeah, and your shareholders care less about product and more about revenue, so...
Or profit. But see, J. Crew is interesting because they've done a really good job with some of their stores, like especially like the liquor store and even like the men's store at their new, like the new men's store on Fifth Avenue, at making, like I go in there and I don't feel like I'm shopping at a chain store.
No.
I feel like I'm at a small boutique where it's like a nice place to hang out. Like it's just a really good feeling experience. But then like I was walking through Rockefeller Center the other day and I'm like, oh, there's a J. Crew there. Or like you just go to some mall in the middle of wherever and there's a J. Crew there. And or like even the mall at Columbus Circle, it just feels kind of less special. And I'm like, oh crap. Yeah. Everyone does have the same, like you think you're shopping at J. Crew and you might get something like unique or special, but the reality is that you're not. Like, everyone's going to have the same stupid plaid shirt in a few months.
Yeah, well, I mean, that comes back to the reason those quote-unquote special shops are in these areas, in Tribeca, on Fifth Avenue downtown, in the one in the Grove in L.A. I noticed was pretty nice. Like the people who worked there were really knowledgeable. They knew, they were like, oh, we don't have this special collaboration in this store, but we have it somewhere else. I think that's because of the clientele. You know, we seek out, we work in media, we're creatives, we live in New York City. We seek out these like special experiences. When I was growing up in Pittsburgh and we got one J. Crew, it was like the biggest deal in the entire world. It didn't matter that it probably wasn't that special, and I'd go back to that J. Crew now and think it was nothing compared to the ones that we shop in, but I remember it being the hugest deal ever because we didn't have anything like that. And the thing about J. Crew that they do well is it is the same across the board, but it's still very true to their brand. And that's when brands start to falter, is when they kind of move away from what their brand mission is. And, you know, every brand has a mission statement. And if your employees don't understand that, and, you know, if you look at Gap, this is exactly, I mean, maybe the key is just to hire Mickey Drexler at every single company ever, because he interviews every single person that goes to work there corporately. He is involved in, he does channel checks. He's really involved. Coach is very similar the way it's run. And I think that's why both of those companies have been very successful. Now, Gap CEO is great at cutting costs, and they are in pretty good shape financially, even though no one shops in that store anymore. They're bringing in someone from COS, this amazing store owned by H&M, and it's only in Europe. It's kind of like high-end but not too expensive fashion that I love and all my friends love. When we go to Europe, we end up buying a lot. They're bringing in a head designer from COS to run their creative, and I think that it will help. But, you know, it's really, really important that every single person that works in your company, especially corporately, if you do own a chain, is like dedicated to that mission statement. And it's kind of like a cult.
Yeah.
But I just
remember, like, when I worked at the Gap in high school in Chicago, we had, there were like 7 Gap stores within walking distance of the one I worked at.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge problem because 2 of them were nicer, or maybe 3 of them were nicer, 2 of them were okay, and 3 of them were just garbage stores that, mm-hmm. you know, I felt bad sending people to. They were just, were not nice inside. And ultimately, most of those stores ended up closing, but especially the garbage ones.
Yeah.
Although now some of the nice ones are gone too.
I think it's just, you
too
know. Many,
too much. There's too much. Starbucks even had to close doors.
Yeah. I mean, what this comes down to is it's just like the ideas of capitalism and what people want from their retailers and you know, you have to kind of decide. And I think our generation, we have a lot of friends who are starting businesses. You're starting a business. And our goals aren't to become the biggest and the most important. Well, at least for me, my goal has never been that. But I just want to have the best, and I'd rather make a decent amount of money that allows me to live in New York City and like send my kids to college, but be really happy with the product I put out. And I think that that's a difference from the generations before us, probably from the baby boomers. I mean, Generation X is so kind of like in between everything. But I think that that's the difference. It's like, do you want to be mass? And if you do, then you have to let go of quality a little bit. If you want to put out a very specific product, you have to understand that you're never going to be the dominant brand. Very rarely do both things happen. Like even Levi's is still pretty authentic in their brand, but they have a collection called Made and Crafted, which is like high end jeans. And I just bought a pair. They're great. But you know, when you go to a Levi's store, a lot of that product's really shitty, you know?
Yeah. And Levi's, it seems like, you know, I'm just making this up now, but it seems like something that like would be special, like you would come to America to buy a pair of Levi's jeans. But now you go to like any random store in like Croatia and they're selling Levi's jeans. Like it's not, or Lacoste too. Like that's so, it mm-hmm. seems like it's like supposed to be a stuffy brand, but you can just buy it literally anywhere now.
Yeah.
It's super, I don't know. So that's like, you know, going for full circle with this, like the Jack Daniels, like, I don't know, is it better than it used to be before because they have more money to do things better? Is it worse because it's everywhere? Like, I don't know. It's just very weird.
It's better for the company. It might not be better for our psyches. and that like, might
we were
be
at
why.
This party last night, and we were drinking like some weird, obscure bourbon cool that I'd never bourbon. Heard of. And I was like, oh, this is, feels a lot more fun than, you know, I chose that over, I don't know what else was sitting there, like some. Even like Maker's Mark, which is a hot, you know, an expensive, you know, like a, not a cheap brand. Like, I don't know. That just felt boring too. Like very.
Yeah. I think that's also a result.
Maybe this is a statement about me more.
Yeah.
Than
I think it's a result of our weird lives.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool. Well, lastly, I wanted to ask the listeners if you have any recommendations for cool stuff for me to do in Tokyo. I'm going there this week to do some research for one of my new projects. And, you know, you're always more knowledgeable than I am about the things that you know about. So if there are any cool shops or neighborhoods or restaurants or coffee shops or anything like that that you love, let me know. You can tweet us at Needle and Mouse. I think that's our Twitter.
I think so. I never
mouse?
Remember.
I think it's Needle and Mouse. Anyway, or me at Frome Dome, FROMEDOME. I'll be there for about a week, and I've been there a few times, so I know like generally what to do there. But if there's anything specific that you would like me to check out,
he
let
needs
me know.
To relax. So
I need
if
to also
any...
relax. So if you have any tips on relaxation,
maybe you should
tip
like
one. Don't go to Tokyo.
Maybe you should rent one of those dogs.
Oh, rent a dog? No, yeah. I don't think so. I think it. We say this as we have our dog between us here. And he's actually being quiet for the first time in a long time.
I feel like he knows when the podcast is happening.
Well, there's the recording. There's the red mic that says on air. And he observes the instructions.
Yes.
No.
No.
All right. Well, we'll see you again soon. There won't be a new show next weekend, but the weekend after that, we'll have probably our last holiday show.
Yeah, holiday extravaganza.
We'll talk about some of the stuff I saw in Japan and some other topics.
I think we should talk about just gifting in general. I hate, gifts in general, because I hate when people use gifting as a verb.
That's not
ever really annoys that. Me.
Right. So find us on the interwebs at theneedleandthemouse.com. You can email us questions. We'd love to do like listener questions if you have any at hello@theneedleandthemouse.com. Or you can find us on Twitter at Needle and Mouse. Or me, I'm From Dome on Twitter, and Lauren is L'après-midi on Twitter, which is French for the afternoon.
Try to figure out how to spell that.
Yeah, learn French and spell it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.